You are listening to an adult formation edition of our podcast from St. Thomas Episcopal Church in Bellevue, Washington. We are a community that seeks God's presence, serves Christ and others, and grows together in faith. Welcome to our podcast. The following presentation is part of our series, Faith and Wellness. This session was presented by the Reverend Karen Hegg on Wednesday, October 19th, 2016.
The Lord be with you. Holy One, we know that you created us for yourself. You created us in your glorious image. You created us for each other. We thank you for the gifts of tenderness and compassion and love. We thank you for your Holy Spirit that dwells as a divine spark in each one of us. And we ask that you give us the grace to recognize that spark in one another and to make our way in the world as people who carry your presence. We pray these things in Jesus' name, the one who was always, always present. Amen. So tonight, we are talking about the heart. And on the Living Compass, the heart is like strength, has two components to it, relationships and emotions. Handling our emotions is something that is a huge component of what happens at the heart level. So the degree to which we're able to handle our emotions has in large part to do with two things. What is my level of self-awareness? And what is my level of emotional intelligence? So I wonder if any of you can tell us about how you measure self-awareness or give an example of a time when you, it's okay, Lori, a time when you knew yourself to be aware, or if you're willing, a time when you recognized that you were not very self-aware. Yes, no, maybe.
I'll start with something.
Thank you, Steve.
So Janie got to go on a trip to Europe with her sisters and mother, and I was with baby Rachel, our daughter, and I was out to prove that I had it all under control during the week, the 2 weeks that were gone. I went across the 520 bridge on a sunny day, and the traffic stopped suddenly. And the guy behind me didn't stop and crashed into me, and it was a big thing. So Janie called the next day to check in. How are things going? Just fine, dear. Everything, Rachel's great, which was fortunately she wasn't in the car, but could have been. Everything is great. Everything is great. And then, so I didn't want her to worry about me while she was gone. So a week later, she comes back, and the problem was I was hoping the car would be in the shop by then, and it's a long story, and it wasn't, and Janie came out and looked at the back end of the van, and she goes, oh, my God, are you okay? Ah! And I just melted, but that was 1 week of stoic, unaware living. I guess we call it compartmentalizing. Mm-hmm. That's what I did. And it was stunning to me how kind of well I could do that until I felt safe, and then it just, yeah.
So you would say that the time of compartmentalizing and acting as if everything was fine was unaware living, even though you were clearly aware of the situation. in your heart of hearts, you were behaving in a way that was unaware. And then when you were loved...
Well, you know, I want to believe that I was in control. that I was aware that I had to hold it together because I had a job to do. I was being a single parent, and I had a job, and I couldn't afford to fall apart in my mind. Uh-huh. So I was consciously choosing, in my mind, how to get through the week. So I had this rationalization, and there was some truth to it, but I was stunned by how much emotion I had, and I was overwhelmed by it. Mm-hmm. Even though I had talked a good game that I thought, oh, I'm aware, you know, but I got to keep it in a box and move on. Like so many of us, we can't have the luxury of falling apart sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I was just, so in some ways I was partially aware because mm-hmm. I thought I had a strategy. So I thought, oh, okay, I see feelings, but I'm going to do something, what I thought was, you know, maybe it was a functional response. But if I had never let that go, I don't think that had been very functional. I think mm-hmm. I'd have been just, you know, carrying another trauma in my mind and mm-hmm. not...
And in your body and in your heart.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So I love what you said, because the connection between what you were doing and calling that unawareness is pretty intricate. That's not necessarily something that we would typically think of as that means you're unaware. Mm-hmm. So I very much appreciate the sort of the delicacy of that situation and how that is emotionally unaware.
I was aware that I could fall apart, and I didn't have my beloved to help me with things. Mm-hmm. So,
mm-hmm. right. Like, how many times do we say, I'm fine. How are you? I'm fine. 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 Yep. Not so much. Fine.
Yep.
Right? We do that. And I think oftentimes we want to believe that. And there's a part of us that always is fine, right? If we rest in God, there really is a part of us that always is fine. And what we're trying to get at here is to find ourselves in the greatest possible opportunity for well-being. And that requires that we tell ourselves the truth, mm-hmm. and ultimately that we're able to tell the truth to others and to God as well. Beth.
So I don't know, does anybody know that old, it's old, the Johari window?
Yes.
Of awareness that I was thinking when you
were
talking
about that.
But
explain it, because I bet a lot
right.
of people don't.
Right, so Johari window is, let me get it. So it's a square, right, windows, and there's four panes. And one of the panes is what everybody knows, you and other people. The other pane is what nobody knows, neither you or the other people know about yourself. And the third pane is what you know and others don't. And the fourth one, we used to call it the halitosis pane. It's what other people know that you don't know. Mm-hmm. And this was in therapy training, that the idea, the goal of therapy was for what you know and everybody else knows and what you know and other you know, that for that to grow, for your transparency to grow, mm-hmm. and for the unknown parts to decrease.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're making me think of Mary Friedlander. One of the last things she talked to me about was God must increase and I must decrease. It's making me think of that. But, right, so we can't get to that place of everybody knowing. We can't, which is really a sort of a key word for that might be transparency. We can't get there without self-awareness, right? Because it's impossible to be transparent, to be see-through, when you don't know who or what you are. So self-awareness, to be self-aware, is to recognize what we're feeling, right? To know what our emotions are. I'm sure, well, I'm not sure. I'm sure for myself. I have been in situations where I am such a bundle of feelings that I just feel like I need to turn into a puddle. I don't know what I'm feeling. I'm just a big bundle of emotions. But being self-aware means being able to recognize what we're feeling, maybe not instantly, but ultimately, and to have an intellectual understanding of what motivates us. So it's an integrated model, right? It's not dualistic. It takes all of our being into consideration. It's head and heart. My theology, the way I like to think about things is that our minds are at the service of our hearts. One of my very, very favorite Bible studies is the story of the walk to Emmaus, and that's a story about after Jesus was resurrected, two of his former followers are walking along the road, and Jesus joins them, and they don't know who he is, and he says, "What are you talking about?" And they say, you must be the only person in town who doesn't know what happened. Like, he was the one. He was supposed to be the Messiah. He was supposed to be the hero. He was supposed to be the one who would come and change everything. And they killed him. And all hope is lost. And they didn't understand who they were dealing with, and they didn't understand who they were talking to, and ultimately they did understand when he broke the bread and it looked like Eucharist. But he said, "Are you so slow of heart?" Jesus did not say, "Are you so dim-witted? Are you so unable to understand?" He said, "So slow of heart." So we need both. And I bet each one of us in our minds and our hearts right now knows which one is prominent for us. So one of the things that we haven't talked about too much in these evenings is how we use this information to move ourselves to a place of greater wellness. I mean, we've talked all about that, but we haven't talked about it specifically. But that is one place where we can really do ourselves, our neighbors, and God a great service, is by recognizing what is the balance or imbalance between head and heart, because we need both, right? The emotional half of self-awareness connects us to our experiences and tells us about the quality of those experiences. So, was it distressing? Was it hurtful? Did it make me mad, glad, sad, afraid? What was my feeling? And when our lives are going well, we just sort of enjoy how we feel, and sometimes we don't pray as much, sometimes we don't worry as much, sometimes we have those big growth spurts that are hard, and then we have those times where things are just kind of going along. Nobody's sick, nothing's wrong with our kids. Relationships are not out of order. But everything is just a season, and we're always going to come back around to all the things as long as we live. We go through all the things, right? So recognizing what we're feeling and not being at the mercy of those feelings is essential. That's different from not owning the feelings, not incorporating the feelings. So it's really important to say the feelings matter, because they do. They're your feelings. They're an intimate, intricate part of you. They matter deeply. And they don't need to drive the bus, right? You have a whole being. You have an entire being that is what you want to bring to bear in the way you live out your life, in the way you walk around in the world. I don't know. Okay, so sometimes you can feel that something's wrong, right? Do you ever have the experience of waking up in the morning and feeling like the other shoe is going to drop, but for no apparent reason? Like, do you ever get a feeling in yourself that something isn't right? Has anybody other than me ever had that experience? Right. Yeah, so we're not necessarily able to name what that is in the moment. But for those folks who tend to go to the head first or more easily or more readily, it's important to pay attention to the fact that sometimes we know, we have a feeling. Sometimes we know stuff in our body. Some people are really, they have a big sense of physicality. And I know people who are so much more in touch with their bodies than I am, that they can, it's like what people used to say or maybe still say about having gout and knowing how the weather's going to change because of how your knee feels. That's not a joke, actually. That's people who have a really strong sense of their physicality, and that's real, too. So, emotional intelligence. Emotional intelligence is sort of what we're talking about here. Any of you had any engagement with emotional intelligence, ever taken an emotional intelligence IQ test or any of that, EQ test? Yeah. So emotional intelligence is the capacity to be aware of, control, and we'll talk about that word, and express our emotions and to handle interpersonal relationships judiciously and empathetically. What does that mean to anyone?
That you're a saint.
That you're a saint?
That you're just a saint if you can do that.
Yeah. What is it, Beth? Blessed are the meek.
Priest once described meek, the quality of meek, like when you're in a car and someone cuts you off and you don't feel like flipping them off. Mm-hmm. It's, you have this equanimity. Mm-hmm. That you might know that it's, you know, something's coming up for you, but it's not ruining your day or anybody else's, and you notice when it comes up and you notice when it leaves and it doesn't give you an ulcer.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I think you said many important things, but notice the word notice, right? And this is what I was talking about when I said that we need to have all of our feelings. It does not work to behave as if that feeling is not there. We need to have all of our feelings, but it's really helpful. An emotionally intelligent person can get a little bit of distance. And not to shut off the feeling, but get a little bit of distance and be able just to notice what's happening. And when we can do that, we have a lot more control over ourselves. We're not making sort of knee-jerk reactions to things. It is an extraordinary thing to feel like we can feel big feelings, be profoundly compassionate, stand at the foot of the cross, be with suffering, and not have those things consume us. Because if we're lucky, we will experience every feeling. If we live long enough, we will have every sort of experience. And a lot of those experiences are painful. We love people, and that breaks our hearts. We lose people. Our dreams die. We're terribly disappointed. You know, all the other things happen too, but those things happen. And that's part of the beauty of being in Christian community, is that it's a little bit easier. Steve and Lex and Catherine and I were in a pastoral care meeting this afternoon. And Steve was talking about someone who's a close person in our parish who is is probably suffering and maybe not able to really experience that. And he talked about the reality that what this community will do is help hold it, so that when all of us share the burdens, one person doesn't have to be completely overwhelmed. I had the kind of phone call you never want to get the other day, and my sister, one of her dearest friends, has a beautiful, bright son who's close to 30, who's a teacher and a coach and a tender-hearted, warm, wonderful person, who hit someone with his car, and that someone died. And my sister, who lives two states away, said her friend, whom we'll call Jane, doesn't have a church. Can she call you? You always make me feel better. And I, yes, of course, but all I said, you know, she's not a part of our community. She doesn't have all the rest of us. It's not me. It's what a community has. And I don't want to disappoint. And what I know I can do is be with her. Is I can listen. I can say my own experience. I can be with. But that is so much, right? Have you ever been suffering terribly and just had someone be with you and it's a little better? You know, when we're surrounded by people who aren't having our exact experience, it makes it possible to remember that babies are still being born, that the sun is still coming up, that seeds are still doing what they do under the ground. You know, all those things we can remember. And when people are brokenhearted, the rest of us hold happiness until they can pick it up again. And when you can count on that in a community, and I believe Christian community is the place I know the best that we can count on that, that changes everything. And that understanding, for me, it's not the clinical definition of emotional intelligence, but it is my personal foundation for emotional intelligence. We can feel. The word control's a little dicey for me. This is a technical description. Steve, I would love it if you would speak to that, if it's not putting you on the spot. But
I agree. I wonder, is regulate any better? Regulate?
Manage? Somebody said manage.
That's, manage. Yeah. But the idea that we're not
work with
just reacting, uh-huh. that we're responding, that we have enough distance to notice that we're having the emotion and enough intelligence to know that if we act on it immediately, it could cause harm, mm-hmm. or do something that, you know, mm-hmm. so it's not stuffing it. I like, you know, you notice the notice, mm-hmm. you know, I think that is getting at it. Mm-hmm. Control, I think, conjures up something that takes us away from that.
Right. You know? Maybe notice is, I mean, yeah. fill in your own word there where control is. But I think for me, it notice is plenty big enough
yeah.
to hold that space.
Yeah. I mean, if we just take control out and just say aware of and express, there's something a little lacking. It's that ability to respect. Yeah, that's
yes.
good. That's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a really good one.
Yeah. I mean, there is some value to controlling your emotions, i.e., I mean, maybe everybody needs that, not exploding, not, mm-hmm. you know, that you,
that's
have
what they mean.
Regulation, you have the ability to, a flexibility in your mm-hmm. Emotional life.
Right. And one of your table questions later will be, are your emotions handling you, or are you handling your emotions? Right?
This discussion brings to mind excuse me, but we did with our staff. We had a business, and we took some of these tests with the management teams. And an everyday work on in the workplace is very important, that you're able to deal with all of these between the team. It was a three-day retreat, and we found that when we took the test, we suddenly could speak together. Oh, this is why you act that way. Uh-huh. I'll be more patient because mm-hmm. that's your nature. Mm-hmm. This is how you react emotionally. If mm-hmm. I give you an order or who was superior, whatever they were doing. Right. So it's very important in the workplace that we consider interpersonal relationships mm-hmm. and the emotions that the staff has in order to deal with the public.
Right. I love what you said, and you can pass the microphone to Todd behind you. I love what you said, and one of the things that really is important to me about what you said is that what you described is totally without judgment. So you're reacting like this when I, as the owner of the business, say I want something like this to happen. You have a big reaction. It doesn't make you wrong. It doesn't make me wrong. What can happen there is, oh, I understand that if I do this, this happens in you. You know, everybody can go away and do their own personal work. But what this is about what happens in the middle for the two people in the communication. And when that can happen without judgment of self, some of us are more judgmental of ourselves, some of us are more judgmental of others. But when it can happen without judgment of self or other, all kinds of new openings happen, and it makes possible transparency, I think. Yeah, thank you for that. Todd?
And some of us are judgmental of ourselves and others.
Some of us are. Probably most of us are, but I think we tend more one way than the other.
You know, as a reforming perfectionist, I think it was interesting to hear the thoughts on an alternative to the word control, and it was also interesting to hear the control evokes some negativity, I think, or a desire to have a more positive term. Somebody put out regulate and or govern. Although I'm not sure govern is a positive term these days. I'm happy to be here instead of watching
not
the
tonight.
Election, right? But I do think, you know, if you control, you know, the old version was it was a control, a remote control, mm-hmm. you know, a control that regulating this volume, those sorts of things. It is about, without the ability to control ourselves, I mean, that's sort of one of the defining characteristics of being civilized, of being human, rather than, you know, the rest of the animals and whatnot in the world. So I think control is, traditional definition is very important in this.
It's not inherently a bad thing.
No,
yeah.
I think what's important about this definition of emotional intelligence is that we have to be aware enough of ourselves and in control that we can then, you know, move beyond ourselves mm-hmm. into mm-hmm. a better, healthier relationship with others.
Mm-hmm. And that's a really cyclical conversation. You know, we can't be in the kind of lovely version of control you're describing if we're judgmental. And if we're judgmental, we can't be in the lovely kind of control you're describing. Yeah, it's a circle. Dwight wants to speak. Would you hand him the microphone? Thank you.
Yeah, I go back to the thing about the being in the automobile and having somebody do something awful to you, you know. And I have a kind of a short fuse, but I think the word control over there is important to me. I know it's a pretty tough word, but I have to learn how to control those things because what happens to me if somebody comes by and cuts me off or whatever, well, then I do some sort of expletive, you know, which I won't mention here. And then I have to, if you've been in centering prayer, when something like that happens, you have to come back to the center, mm-hmm. you know, after everything mm-hmm. has happened, you know, and get focused again. And so, to me, I've learned that I have to control those things, but I'm not going to control how I really feel about it, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be okay, but I have to recognize who I am and so on. Because
right.
if I can't do that, see, you only hurt yourself when you do that.
Yep.
And if I can't, if I hurt myself, I can't be any good to anybody else.
Right.
You know? And so I can't handle any interpersonal relationships very well, you know? And so you have to do it in the moment, raise hell with the people, get on with it, and, you know, move on to do the best you can, you know?
Right. And, right, I think that's a little of what I was talking about at the beginning. And I actually believe we can get to the point where we skip the raising hell with people step and go from having the big feeling and then doing that sort of control thing with it, or doing, you know, whatever it is we need to do with it. I'm totally in agreement with you, though. You cannot... We do ourselves a terrible disservice, and we do everybody around us a terrible disservice when we deny whatever feeling we have. And the reason we do that is because we think it's wrong. And that is just like, that just needs to stop. It's not healthy. There is nothing healthy about that. Sure.
As a word person, I just have to suggest another word. I'm sorry.
Great. Shirley's the editor, sublime.
I'm thinking be aware of and be in charge of your own emotions, which is really, really difficult. But when you break it all down, you do have a choice. And if someone does something bad to me in the car, I can either... you know, react.
And we hope it's not your husband who didn't recognize your car.
I can react in an emotional, well, emotional is not a good word, but in a negative way, or as one of my priests once said, when someone flips me off in the car, I just bless them. And so I think it's recognizing, yes, I have feelings and emotions about things, but maybe I can take charge and rely on things like I've learned from the other priest or from the present priest or whomever. Just, I don't have to respond in kind. I can respond perhaps in a different way if I can rise to that occasion.
In a way that I would submit, in a way that's authentic to you. Authentic to the truth of who you are. Which is not a person without feelings, but the truth of who you are is God's own beloved, created to pour love into the world, right? You want to really make a flipper offer mad? Do this.
Oh. Well, given...
Danger. Yeah. Margo has something to say.
What I hear is we're talking about the adult world, and there are times... that we are not dealing with in the adult world. We're dealing with our children or people that are helpless. And you are not in a position where you can acknowledge that you are fearful. You hold that because you are being the strong person, you're comforting. And I think of a very good example in my own life. I was moving from the Midwest to Portland, Oregon, with two young girls. The oldest was a first grader, and the youngest was going to start kindergarten. And I moved. I brought them out in the airplane. We stayed the first night in a motel. Second night, the movers were to come to this house and unload the furniture. And when I got to the house, I realized that there were two vacant lots, one on either side. I knew no neighbors. I knew no one there. And so what was I going to do? I had no telephone because the telephone was ordered, but they said 4 days for a telephone. And I didn't want my girls to be afraid. So the movers came. They left the furniture, and then I realized that the men that unloaded the furniture were people they'd picked up, you know, someplace downtown Portland. I had no idea where these strangers were. And so I had to be very brave for about 'cause
that was scary.
I had to. I could not acknowledge fear. because of them. So
could I invite the possibility that you could acknowledge the fear, but you could not respond to it?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I love what you're saying, and I thank you very much for reminding us of that, because you're right, Margo.
We are aware, but we cannot respond to it.
Obviously, there are times when we have to contain, and as Steve led with earlier this evening, we just need to compartmentalize.
Right, absolutely.
And that's not an unhealthy thing. That is the good and right thing to do in that circumstance.
And I think we do it with loved ones.
Absolutely.
Who are experiencing their last days. And we don't want them to be fearful,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
although we are fearful.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes we
them.
Are. Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you very much. Steve.
So on the last screen, anyway, we were talking about emotion. That's all right, Karen. No. We know. As an interpersonal element,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes I feel like it's so completely, it's not external at all. It's very internal, and this may speak to what Todd was saying about judging yourself if you're a perfectionist and so forth. And if I were to personalize that or internalize that, I would say there are certain emotions that I can't control, but they're not going to hurt anybody,
mm-hmm.
and they're not going to even, they shouldn't offend anybody. I just get emotional sometimes if I have to speak in front of a crowd or read something, and so I won't control it. It comes up without any, I don't know when it's going mm-hmm. to happen. So for me, it is about honoring that emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And so not judging myself, and I can only hope that others won't, but mm-hmm. I can't have
right.
no control
but
over that.
You can't,
but
right.
it's simply about honoring that element
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
if I put this on a more personal
mm-hmm. so important
level.
I used to worry because sometimes, like, we have a Wednesday Eucharist, which is very beautiful and very little and intimate. And at the end of that Eucharist, we offer the opportunity for healing prayer. And so people will come, and we all put our hands on the person, and people will come, and they'll say something, especially if it's a mother, saying something about a child or a grandchild, and so tender and so sad or so scary or such a bad diagnosis or something. And it's my job at that point, or Steve's job at that point, or Lexi, you know, whoever is holding the service, it's our job to put our hands on that person and pray over them. And sometimes I cry. And I just, like, I used to fight that in myself so much. And, you know, I would apologize to people. And to a person, every single person said something to the effect of, oh, that just made me know you were in it with me, or, you know, whatever their own words were. But I can't be, it's not that I'm not strong. I have Jesus Christ. I am strong as strong can be, but I am tender and I feel things deeply. And, you know, my worry is that that would make someone feel like they couldn't say what they needed to say to me because it would make me cry. But it is not that. We have to let each other be responsible for our own feelings. We have to not take responsibility for the other person. Let them have their feelings. And if there's something to be said about it, ask. You know? I love what you said. Thank you. Peter.
I just have a story I just have to tell because this is just relating for me. But my son lives in Sun Valley, and we were going over there quite a few years ago now, 6-7 years ago, and he had a new job as a sushi chef. And we weren't into sushi. We go into sushi on second, and here's Kyler up there, and we sit down, and Mary Jane's there. I'm here, and on the other side of Mary Jane, there's this guy who is kind of out of control, and he's ranking on our son, kind of little bit viciously and obnoxiously, and I'm sitting there, and he's not going to last too long, I can tell, but I'm saying he can't get out of here. I got to say something to him. What do I say? And I don't want to hit him in the face because that'll probably cause a big row, and
bad
I don't want any part of that. So as he gets up, I get up, and somehow my internal clock says, don't burn any bridges. So like you say, be nice, understanding. So he gets up, I stand up, put my arm around him, and I said, you know, buddy, if you're going to rank on the sushi chef, you surely shouldn't be sitting next to his mother.
Oh, well played.
The guy just melted.
Yeah,
sits well down, played. Back down, apologizes all over the place to Mary Jane. And everybody, you know, and so and I'm always thankful that I took that approach as opposed to the more the extreme approach, which might have...
That wouldn't have worked.
Which wouldn't have worked. It would have burned all the bridges that were ever built, and I'd have been in trouble. And
right.
So anyway, but I know myself to say that attitude of how I handle things at work and is kind of built into me because I always seem to find a way to deal with it on an even, easy, soft way, but somehow get the point across.
Mm-hmm. So are you...
I have no idea if she's agreeing with anything I'm saying.
No, please hold the microphone for a second. Do you have any... is there anything you can say about how that works in you? Is there any... Because I think it's unusual and interesting and lovely, and I think lots of us would like to be able to do that. Is there anything you can say about what your internal process is or isn't that allows you to open your mouth and have the tender thing rather than the attacking thing come out?
Well, I know I'm an architect. I've been doing this for 40 years, and I know it doesn't work to do the hard thing. It just doesn't work. And I don't know if that's where I learned it, or if I got it from my mother, or where I got it from, or Mary Jane impact on my life. But somehow, I don't have to dream it up when the circumstance arises.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of there.
It's your go-to.
And I'm always sort of happy about that because if you look at over the years or wherever, because in my office, there's certainly opportunities for... to go the other way. And yet somehow I'm the even guy. I'm the guy that people look to kind of keep it under control. And that's, I don't know. It's
a gift.
It's a gift, yeah.
It's a gift. But it also sounds like it's really been cultivated, and it sounds like where we were a few slides back, that incredible connection between your understanding and your heart. So what the things you say you're saying are about what a tender heart would say, but you need to bring your intellect to that so that you can do it.
I'm sure it's all much more complicated than I can ever think of. It just somehow that works for me, but to explain it all, I'd be here all night probably. It's like Steve in his car, you know, he's kind of getting hit on lately. First it was the thing on the slopes of Seattle and the stick shift, and now it's...
Hey, I was behind Steve Best this morning on 2nd and Marion.
Steve to see if he can contain himself through all this.
Thank you. Rich conversation. Okay, emotional intelligence is often said to include self-awareness, self-management, social awareness, and relationship management. There are lots of different versions of this. But that pretty much covers it. And then you see the little picture to the side, the graphic, perceiving, so that's one kind of language. The graphic on the side, perceiving emotions, understanding emotions, managing emotions, which I think is what you were getting at, Shirley, and using emotions. Very different way to think about it. So your self-awareness... You recognize your own feelings. You recognize that they affect you and how they affect you, hopefully, and how they affect your behavior. An emotionally intelligent person knows strengths and weaknesses and has a sense of confidence because of a lack of judgment. Self-management, you're able to control your impulses.
Do you know people who are impulsive and can't control their impulses? Comes out in shopping a lot, right? Comes out in yelling a lot. People who don't have impulse control, that makes for really difficult relationships. And the way you can, you know, whether you know anything about emotional intelligence or not, and there are people in this room who know more about it than I do by far, but one indicator, I think, is how are your relationships going? You know, emotionally intelligent people navigate relationships better than people who are not. Social awareness is interesting. That has to do with how other people react to you and how you react to other people. Understanding the needs and concerns of others, it's a little bit like empathy. I serve as the chaplain to the little tiny people at St. Thomas School, and every year I do a lesson on empathy. And I bring a big basket of all different sizes and kinds of shoes. And I hold up the shoes and I ask them who they think wears these shoes. And then we've set up some sort of situation and I say, so what is this person doing in that situation and how does this person feel? And it's about learning to be able to walk in each other's shoes, being able to learn to give everything we have to understanding where another person is. I was on a bus one time, and there were screaming children, and a father who appeared to be capable and oblivious at the same time. And sounds like a parent to you. Yeah. Well, I mean, those of you who know me, I am passionate about children and about parenting and about not right and wrong parenting, but deeply attentive parenting. And, you know, so I'm getting all riled up inside and, you know, going through, my heart's going like this, and I'm going through the conversation in my head that I'm about to have with this man about why isn't he paying attention. And then something happened, and I can't remember, it must have been a phone call or something, and his wife has just suddenly died. And the paradigm shift that happens in that moment, I'm covered with goosebumps. I want to remember that every single day. I have a thing on my refrigerator that says, be kind. Everyone is fighting their own great battle. You know, some people have really secret lives, but all of us have things that we're doing inside of ourselves that maybe we don't even share with God, let alone our partners, our children, our best friends. When people irritate me driving, I think that could have been my mom. The last thing on earth my mom ever needed was for somebody to honk at her. She was always worried about what she did wrong. You know, she did not need anybody honking at her. So that kind of empathy, being able to be in each other's shoes, that is my version of social awareness. And relationship management, it just is like, I don't even like those words, but we'll say that that's about learning how to cultivate good and healthy relationships, and then I can be okay with it. You know this one? Who thinks it's a song by the Birds and who thinks it's a Bible verse?
Both.
Mm-hmm. I got the song and the very last line. Yeah. So look at all the feelings in there. Look at all the emotions. Whoa, look at the time. Pardon? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think it holds all the things that we've talked about, right? Yeah. So all kinds of things have been written about emotional intelligence, and we know that the higher our emotional intelligence, the greater our satisfaction is with our relationships, and the greater our satisfaction is with our relationships, the greater our satisfaction with our lives. Right? Even those of us who are profound introverts or think we don't like people, there's a big part of life that's missing if we're not in relationship. And being able to manage, to control, to whatever words we want, so that we can be in relationship with people who are having experiences totally other than our own. And the hardest ones to do that with are the people that we're closest to, because we actually think we know what's going on for them, and we don't. We know something, but we don't know everything. So that those kinds of things are the things that, that make for a higher emotional intelligence quotient. Yeah, and again, to remember that it's not about having the feelings. Having the feelings is always correct. What we do with the feelings is what makes up the stuff of our lives. Somebody gave me a card recently. A parishioner brought me a card and a magnet. And the magnets, I put it on the refrigerator in there because I thought it was so lovely. It said, to the world you may be just one person, but to one person you may be the world. And I think if we all walked around in the world like that, if we all walked around in the world with this beautiful balance of knowing that we mean everything and true humility, that like all, there would be no debate tonight, right? All the problems would be over. If everyone walked around in the world showing up with every good thing that they have, so that the people who aren't able to do that because of the circumstances of their lives, everything would get balanced out. So I'm an idealist. I'm a Christian. My job is to hold hope. But I believe that with my whole heart. I was in Panama for a summer after seminary, and or during seminary, and doing mission work in Panama. And I remember the first time I saw the buses that carried bazillions of people that just belched out black smoke. It made me sick. It just made me sick, because of what it was doing to, you know, everybody was breathing that air, and it was unbelievable. It was nothing like anything I'd ever seen before. And my first thought was, there's something very wrong that people in the United States of America don't do double, triple, quadruple duty on environmentalism, because we can. We have plenty. We have everything we need. The only reason we don't recycle is because we don't bother. It's not that there isn't somebody who's going to come pick it up. You know, the reason that we leave our car engines running, I'm showing my personal agenda here, is because we don't want to put the coat on in the car. You know, those kinds of things. That all has to do with the social network that's really, really big, right? So, to one person you may be, to the world you may be one person, but to one person you may be the world. Am I able to create and maintain healthy and life-giving connections with other people? So did you all take the assessment? Did you do the relationship part of the assessment? It's pretty interesting. I love these kinds of things where you get to learn about yourself based on somebody's idea of a test. So we've done Myers-Briggs and the Enneagram and now this. I heartily encourage you to work through this workbook. It is really, it's enlightening and it's kind. It's kind, it's gentle. And there's just so much to know. And what I wish I had known to do was, before I took the assessment, I wish I could have guessed. I wish I had guessed at where I would land on all the things. It was surprising.
If you want to be brave, have your partner fill it out on you.
Oh, and compare what it to a great idea.
Your self-report versus what your partner did. And try not to get in a fight about it. Because the price of being right is that you'll lose closeness and intimacy.
Right. Do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? Yeah. Yep. I'm all over that. Okay, you know this one. This one happens a lot at weddings. It's beautiful. Will somebody read it? I'm tired of my voice.
Got a frog in my throat. If I speak in the tongues of mortals and of angels, but do not have love, I am a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have prophetic powers and I understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith so as to move mountains, but do not have love, I am nothing. If I give away all my possessions, and if I hand over my body so that I may boast, but do not have love, I gain nothing. Love is patient, love is kind, love is not envious or boastful or arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice in wrongdoing, but rejoices in the truth. It bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never ends.
And that's because of Jesus. So love is the most profound emotion we ever experience. There are all kinds of love. We've talked about the different sorts of love that are described in Scripture, agape, eros, all kinds of love. We were made for love. Our God's name is love. We were made from love. We are made of love, and that is the key. Being able to access that and give that is the key to great happiness. So love is obviously the foundation of relationships. What constitutes a healthy relationship? I like this saying, a healthy relationship will never require you to sacrifice your friends, your dreams, or your dignity. So that's a little bit about boundaries, right? A healthy relationship is constituted of personal integrity, healthy boundaries, transparency, vulnerability, and empathy. I think we've talked about everything there except for vulnerability. Who can tell us what vulnerability means to them?
I have an example. I was thinking about something from another reference, but that, yeah, I think it has to do with this too. There was a video of the Dalai Lama, and he was greeting people in a crowd, and apparently one person, a woman, who was saying something to him, and he just started crying. And then she said something else, and he started laughing. And, you know, to look at him, he looked crazy. You know, he looked like a crazy person. First he's crying, and he's, I mean, literally within a minute, he's laughing. There's that vulnerability, transparency that's just very fluid.
Thank you. Right. And again, the question of judgment or the absence of judgment has to be present in order to be able to be vulnerable. So I'm out of time, so I'm just going to whip through the next couple of things, and if any of this piques your interest, you can certainly talk about it amongst yourselves. And I have several questions for you that you can talk about too. The commandment, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not covet, and any other commandment are all summed up in this word. Love your neighbor as yourself. Do you see what's happening in that picture? That man has taken his shoes off and is giving his shoes to this heartsick young woman. So again, human connection is absolutely the key to our health and our happiness. I mean, this being made from and for love is the basis of, it's the foundation of our being, and I believe it's a universal truth. All kinds of science backs this stuff up. When we don't know Muslim people, our lives change radically when we know their names and become
and get into relationship with them. When we don't know people who are racially different from us, who are economically different from us, when we don't know the other, the stranger, we can keep them at arm's length. But when we touch their hand, when we eat with them, when we find out their names, we become human, and that's where our love can start to bubble up. And so we moved ourselves into the notion of relationship without really talking about relationship per se, but all of that stuff about emotional intelligence, all that stuff about judgment, all that stuff about feelings, that is all in service of changing the world by loving the world back into wholeness. And that's what Jesus came and did with us and for us. And I think that's what we are also called to do. So those are matters of the heart. I have a bunch of questions that you can consider if you'd like to. And otherwise, please feel free to talk about anything that has mattered to you that you've heard tonight. And remember, the more vulnerable and transparent you are, the richer your conversation will be. So we're coming close to the end of our time. Do you all want to just continue where you are, or do you want to share anything with one another? Anything is okay with me. I kept us a long time. I talked for a long time. And
I was just remarking to the group that when I filled out my relationship section of the survey, the questions that were asked, I was able to say yes to. I noticed that I was able to say yes to them because of this community. So that my strength in relationships, even though, and we talked about that we're very self-reliant people here, but that there's something that this community brings, this resilience and this continuity in relationship, that I just thought that was really interesting.
Thank you, Beth. And that goes to what Steve was talking about last week about resilience.
Yeah. I wanted to say one thing. There was a time in my life where I was going through a lot of pain, and as a young person, and I remember it was the whole thing was structured to be happy and clappy, and I felt so alienated that there was no room in the worship, or there was no room in the conversations in this particular community that would happen. Not this one, but when I was a young man, I felt so alone. It's unbelievable how alone you can feel and be in a group, and it's unbelievable how connected and empowered you can feel in a group. But I think the loneliest place in the world is to be in a relationship, maybe it's a friendship or a marriage or even a faith community, where you cannot express yourself. You cannot be real. You can't, there's not, either you don't have the, it's too hard to take the risk, or the community is sending messages on some level that we don't want to hear this. You can be happy here, but you can't be sad.
Right. It's not the full range of emotion.
Yes. Yeah.
Can you express glad, mad,
yeah,
sad, afraid? The whole range.
Right. And Jesus, of course, modeled, we were talking in our group about how he exemplified the ability to get access to the widest range of motion, and then he was had the EQ to understand how to engage people on multiple levels appropriate to the context. He didn't just use one size of emotion for every situation.
And love as the foundation of every single, as the foundation for anger.
Yep.
You know, the whole search for justice, and Luke's gospel being all about the kingdom of God being about justice.
Mm-hmm.
Anger, sadness, all those things come from love.
Yeah.
Connection. Yeah. Anybody else?
Linda, did you want to say something about risk? Well, actually, you know, that beautiful story about being present. Do you mind sharing that one?
You want me to share
That was beautiful, being present to someone who was in great pain.
We were talking about emotions, how you motivate without knowing it, probably from your heart. And I shared an experience I had with an old lady. She was also Danish, and I knew she was dying, and it was Christmas Day. So I told my, this goes back at least 20 years, so I told my family my Christmas and your Christmas is that I will spend time with this lady today and you will have your Christmas without me. And that was fine. So I sat with her and she was very, very restless. And I thought, well, what can I do to help her? And then I whispered into her ear very closely and very clear the Lord's Prayer in Danish. And it was quite a revelation for me to see how suddenly, slowly she relaxed and her face was beautiful and she dozed off to sleep and passed away within the next morning. And that has stayed with me as one of my most beautiful experiences in relationship to other people.
Yes. Thank you.
For more information about St. Thomas Episcopal Church, please visit our website, www.stthomasmedina.org. That's www.stthomasmedina.org.